It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 15th day of May, 2024. This is The Horn, headon.live. It's where you'll find us on the interweb, too. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And where, if you do pop into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, well, you'll be greeted by Too Much Hutch and Anatole and Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky, and moderated by moi? Yeah, Roger's got a food preservers meeting this afternoon, and said he would be a bit late to the party because, of course, among other things to do with food preserving, he is always a Zimmergist extraordinaire. Hi, I'm Robin. If you are listening to the podcast, please be so kind as to like each episode wherever you download it. And leave a comment here and there. It helps build visibility for the program. And, well, it makes Brother Deacon Asa very, very happy. For his is a thankless task. Making sure this program, I thank Brother Deacon Asa every evening. Be lost without him. So at the front of the program, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. And just in case people aren't, because some people fast forward, to blow off the end of the program, whatever, the credits. Just a reminder, here during the beginning of the program, that if in fact there's anything you think you would ever want to download from WhiteRoseSociety.org, please go and download it between now and June the 1st, because White Rose will go dark on June the 1st. Ben Birch hanging it up after more than 25 years, almost single-handedly saving progressive talk on the Internet. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so we say thanks to our 15th day of the month subscribers via PayPal. Thank you, Robert. And, well, it appears that Robert is our lone subscriber on the 15th. If anybody else would like to give Robert some company, well, the PayPal button is at headon.live on the main page. And if you click it, it'll offer you a chance to just put in like 10 bucks or whatever and make it happen every month and set it and forget it. And, well, just a gentle reminder, if you do a $10 a month subscription, you're definitely going to be out something less than 45 cents a day. Yeah? You can't even buy a song on iTunes for that. You can't, that won't even get you a half of a no cheese on it McDonald's hamburger. And, well, not that you want one of those anyway. That was an unpaid product non-placement. Had a lovely day today. Annette had an appointment in Beckley, so we got up and got dolled up and went across to Beckley. And there I went by the Horn mailbox where I picked up, and thank you very kindly, an anonymous friend had sent along a case of oat milk. Oat milk creamer, barista style. And we're glad to have that here because, our kind anonymous internet friend thought of that back when we were talking about the bird flu viral particles in the milk supply. And so we've got that standing by if things get weird. Thank you very kindly for that. And so the fundraising goal for today is at $1,475. We are $25 short of being unfunded for a full broadcast week. So that's today, Wednesday, the 15th, Tuesday, Monday, Friday, and all but $25 of Thursday. And here come the bills. Here come the middle of the month bills. But hopefully we can knock some of that down this evening. And now to, by the way, thank you for your patience yesterday. I knocked off a little bit early so I could go across to watch the returns come in. And I did. And the moment that everyone's waiting for, if you haven't already seen on the interweb tubes, I won. I am, God, I can't believe it. It was a mess trying to inform people that my opponent was pining for the fjords, deceased, no more. Good guy. And so I... I beat him by 58 votes. Yeah. And so I'm the nominee now for District 51 in the West Virginia House of Delegates. It is, to the best of my knowledge, the first time that any out person of transgender experience has ever been nominated for a seat in either party, in any party, in West Virginia's legislature. And it's kind of humbling and breathtaking to ponder. And thanks to all of you who sent good wishes along the way. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you to Haley, and each and every one of you who were out there rooting for me. I also know who won the Republican primary. He's a guy whose first loyalty, he says with his own campaign materials, his first loyalty is to Trump. And he's also pro-life, which means he's anti-woman. Well, thank you, Cynthia. Cynthia writing, yay, there's one step out of the way. Yeah, onward to November. So I've got, good gracious, there's so much work to be done. It's sort of mind-bending if I spend too much time on it, but I got most important thing is to get out and talk to people and find out if we want to continue down this road of a dysfunctional legislature that is comprised of nothing but a great squirming, crawling mass of hate, or if we can be as good as we actually are. Because that's the thing. I love my state. Anybody who's listened to this program for the last 20 plus years knows that I love my state. I am West Virginian through and through, for generation upon generation. And one of these days, we will live up to our potential. And we'll stop letting others define us. And we will thrive and we will flourish. Ah, come on, Brother Deacon. Don't do that. How'd you knock off your opponent, Kincaid? You take a long trip off a short pier, small airplane accident? Strictly natural causes. Made it. Now, program note, I will not be here tomorrow evening. I have a county Democratic Executive Committee meeting, and I will be there. I think it's necessary. I kind of show the flag, so no program tomorrow. And then back for Friday on the front porch. Well, thank you, Ralphs. I'll offer a $25 challenge for Robin winning her primary. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. So we can get down to $14.25 if someone wants to match that $25. And that's, you know, that's not fundraising for the campaign. That's just the usual, what we do here to try to keep everything going and plates spinning and all the sticks and the packets passing and the streams streaming. Emilio, thank you for the parrots. He's an ex-candidate. But there are so many things to work on between now and November. And hopefully I can get some new yard signs printed and some big banners, too. I'm worried about this place where I live. And let me say it to you, I don't like nonpartisan elections. Because they let candidates hide from the electorate. We will now have a new circuit judge. A wonderful woman named Kathleen Murphy made a great effort to prevent the guy winning who did win. But she came up just a little bit short. She would have been a great judge. This guy is going to be a nightmare. He is the biggest homophobe, biggest transphobe, one of the biggest misogynists, probably a racist, in the state of West Virginia. And he's going to be sitting in judgment of other people. And God help any of them who aren't white, straight, cis, male, and his brand of Christian. It's worrisome. The turnout was abysmal, as primaries so often are in this state. I mean, bad. Terrible. I think somewhere less than 25% of eligible voters in my county cast a ballot. Republicans did a much better job of getting out the vote than Democrats did. But I'm nonetheless optimistic. What goes on in that voting booth is entirely private. And there's only one choice for anyone who values women's rights in this race that I'm in. I'm her. Because the other guy's over there going to be barking about the precious little fetuses. And he's endorsed by West Virginians for Life. That gang of hypocrites. Misogynist, self-hating women. I don't know. We'll see. Irish Dave. I saw what you wrote there in the chat room. So we didn't have any trial to talk about today. Whatever shall we do? I know. Well, that's okay. There's still other stuff to talk about. There's a big old grift on the horizon. Another Trump grift. And it has to do with the oil industry. Huh. Imagine that. I find this one interesting, though, because yesterday we were talking about the fact that Judge Merchan may want to have a look at Trump's conduct relative to bringing in all these maggot weirdos. To say things that he's not allowed to say as a result of the gag order. But the gag order says he can't direct other people to do it either. And in the latest development in this matter, it became quite obvious that he is, in fact, holding the puppet strings. And he's actually been seen editing the speeches that his sleazy little minions grunt into microphones outside the courthouse. Check in with Alex Wagner on MSNBC.
Matter. Do you think today did anything to disabuse him of the idea that he's winning?
I doubt it. I mean, you know, I think that the interesting thing that's going on in the courtroom is you see these people, as you say, kind of coming in to almost sort of pay homage to Trump, sitting quietly and listening to this incredibly damning testimony and drawing conclusions that are maybe quite different than what the jury is drawing. But the most interesting thing I thought about Mike Johnson was that it's probably mentioned by others, but you know, he didn't even come into the courtroom.
Yeah.
He just was in there for a minute, and he came out and decried the witch hunt that was going on inside.
Put his time in on that bench.
He didn't get there. He didn't check his cell phone.
There's also another aspect to this, which is, of course, I mean, I found it both sort of thuggish and pathetic in equal measure. But there's another aspect to this, which is that Donald Trump has a gag order.
Yes.
The gag order prohibits him from making certain statements. He wants to still make those statements. So he is getting other people who are not subject to the gag order to come and make those statements. And it really is the equivalent of, like, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you. Like, I mean, it really is that every day, because they come out and they say things that are obviously, I'm not saying, like, literally copied and pasted from him or given directly, but, you know, people know what Donald Trump wants to hear. They parrot the lines of attack, specifically lines of attack that are things that he cannot say.
Well, and specifically lines of attack directed at the judge's daughter,
correct,
which is a hobby horse of Donald Trump's. We have a little bit of that sound. Let's play it.
The judge inside, his daughter is making millions of dollars running against Donald Trump, raising money for Donald Trump's political opponents.
You've got relatives of the judge that are benefiting financially.
The only thing that's being done wrong is by this judge. His daughter's making money, raising money for Democrats.
The real bookkeeping that we need accounting of is Judge Merchan's own family member collecting millions of dollars as a Democratic operative.
The judge's own daughter is making millions of dollars doing online fundraising for Democrats. They're using this trial as a hook. It's so corrupt. It's so corrupt, and everybody knows it.
I mean, mean, Mike, are you wearing the red tie? Yeah, Vivek, I'm wearing the red tie. You got the note about the judge's daughter? I got it, Doug. Byron, you got it? I mean, they're not even trying to hide what they're doing.
Well,
here.
In court yesterday, actually, I was sitting close enough that I could actually look over Trump's shoulder and see what he was reading. At one point, he was actually reading the quotes that these individuals were and going through and making notations with a pen on the paper.
Before or after?
While testimony was going on, while Michael Cohen was testifying against him, he was actually going through and annotating and editing the quotes that these people were going through.
I mean, in addition to being utterly humiliating and transparent, there's also a real question about whether this is legal. Part of the gag order, Michelle, is that you cannot direct others to violate the gag order for you, which is clearly what's happening here.
Right. I mean, it's sort of like he gets hit for retweeting. So instead of retweeting, he just gets the people to come in.
Yeah,
and
human
actually
retweets. Human retreats. That's exactly what they are.
And I mean, and Tommy Tuberville was out there saying, "I am here to help him fight." Right? I'm breaking the gag order. I'm trying to get around the gag order. And I don't even know if there is a body of law that addresses this because it seems like so outside the norm.
It is, and I'm no legal expert. It is difficult to.
So there we are. And he's doing it in. Man, talk about brazen. He's doing it in front of the judge. Daring him to call him out on it.
He's got a very big brain, and so that includes being an editor. I can edit words. I have all the best words.
Yeah, Cynthia, right there with you. And I'm sure the pigs will be pushing child marriage for nubile, fertile, ripe young girls. Yeah, ripe and fertile. That's the phrase that that creep maggot from New Hampshire used in trying to defend marrying little teenage girls off to creepy old men. Ugh. So, and now apparently there is an investigation, or has been an investigation, will be an investigation. Jamie Raskin fired off a letter to the heads of the American Petroleum Institute, Cheniere Energy, Chesapeake Energy, Chevron, Continental Resources, EQT Corporation, ExxonMobil, Occidental Petroleum, and Venture Global LNG, liquid natural gas, and said, "Huh, all you fellers were at a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago in Florida last month, and, quote, media reports raised significant potential ethical campaign finance and legal issues that would flow from the effective sale of American energy and regulatory policy to commercial interests in return for large campaign contributions. Mr. Trump's unvarnished quid pro quo offer is especially troubling evidence in light of recent accounts that the U.S. oil industry is drawing up ready-to-sign executive orders for Donald Trump aimed at pushing natural gas exports, cutting drilling costs, and increasing offshore oil leases in case he wins a second term. Congressman Raskin of Maryland was basing all of this on an article published at Politico. He said, "These preparatory actions suggest that certain oil and gas companies, which have a track record of using deceitful tactics to undermine effective climate policy, may have already accepted or facilitated Mr. Trump's explicit corrupt bargain." And earlier today, interviewed on CNN, Congressman Raskin back.
Race that could determine whether Democrats hold on to power in the U.S. Senate. Joining me now is someone who knows about Maryland's love for blue crab, even though he just confirmed to me that he is a vegetarian. So we're not going to get deep into that, but you definitely understand your state, Jamie Raskin. Thank you so much for being here.
That
on that note,
much.
Your preferred candidate, County Executive also Brooks, will she won the Democratic primary. She will now go up against Larry Hogan, who, of course, was a very popular governor. How is that going to play, particularly given the fact that he not only came in with a high percentage of support, but he even left that way when you look at polls?
Well, thank you for that. I should say I ate my share of blue crabs before I became a vegetarian, so I've helped to stimulate our state's economy in that way. Look, Angela Alsobrooks is someone who has been radically underestimated during her entire political career. She's undoubtedly an underdog going into the general election, given that former Governor Hogan ran statewide twice, and she has never run statewide before in a general election. And yet she was also discounted in this primary race, but was able to overcome an excellent opponent in David Trone, who also spent more than $60 million. So she has proven herself very adept at creating effective political coalitions that address the questions of the day. And that's really the critical thing here. Pro-choice is going to be a catalyzing issue in Maryland. It's going to be on the ballot in a referendum. And of course, the whole country is thinking about what Donald Trump and his party have done, which is to steal away from tens of millions of American women their right to choose in consultation with their families and their physicians, instead putting the locus of choice in state legislatures. And having been in a state legislature, I will tell you, I do trust the women of America more than the state legislators to be making these fundamental health decisions. So Angela Alsobrooks has said she will vote for the Women's Health Protection Act to codify Roe versus Wade in America. The former Governor Hogan has not said what he will do about that. He has not said whether he will support making Roe versus Wade the law of the land.
Congressman, I'm glad you brought that up, because the former governor was on the show shortly after he announced his Senate candidacy, and he pushed back against Democratic criticism on abortion. I want you to listen to what he said. It's your self-described pro-life. You're really out of step with your
that's
blue state.
That's not true.
No?
Yeah, that's not really true at all, Dana. Okay. I have a long, very, very moderate position on abortion. This is
how would you describe it?
Look, I'm personally not a proponent of abortion, but I said I'm not going to take away that right for others to make that decision for themselves.
He has a track record. Larry Hogan has not a damned word to say about abortion. Women's reproductive health care should be something that is never never emerges from his mouth unless it is to say, none of my business. Plain and simple. Oh, he's a moderate. Bullshit. He'll kiss Nitwit Nero's hairy orange toe at the drop of a sweat sock. They all will. They all do. Yeah, sell that somewhere else, Larry Hogan. Nobody here is buying it.
Themselves, I made a this is a kind of a tired attack from the Democratic Party.
What's your reaction?
Well, he would like it to be a tired attack. Unfortunately, it's his political party that has made it a central issue in 2024. Donald Trump is bragging all over the country about how he appointed the Supreme Court justices who destroyed Roe versus Wade and have stolen away the rights of women all across the country. But we will be looking at the former governor's record, his actual record in Maryland, because a lot of us were in the legislature and we remember what he did. But the real question is, if and when you are elected to the U.S. Senate, will you stand with the Democratic majority to codify Roe versus Wade and to make Roe versus Wade the law of the land again, which is what the vast majority of the American people want. And Hogan has never said what he will do about it. And of course, he has to pander to the Trumpian base in order to get to where he wants to go. And the reason that they want him there is so he will be another brick in the wall of GOP support for a right-wing Trump agenda. Look, Marylanders know democracy's on the ballot. Freedom is on the ballot. This is a very high-stakes election. We are in the fight of our lives here, and we are going to expose the real contrast and differences in the policy positions between these two candidates. And Angela Alsop Brooks was a great state attorney, a great prosecutor, a great county executive, and she will go to the U.S. Senate to fight for the pro-choice rights of America's women, for the voting rights of the American people, and for democracy against the Trump Party of authoritarians.
Congressman, I want to just switch gears quickly to what happened in New York yesterday. The House Speaker joined Donald Trump at that Manhattan courthouse, came out and did a talk to reporters and talked about the trial being a sham. You, of course, just last week voted to keep Johnson on as Speaker. What happened yesterday give you second thoughts?
Well, I didn't vote for that. I voted to table Marjorie Taylor Greene's resolution.
But that's effectively the same thing.
Well,
no, it's not the same thing,
Danabash. Look, never before have we had a Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives travel to a criminal trial in order to vouch for, in this case, an adjudicated rapist, someone who has been civilly convicted of fraud in hundreds of millions of dollars against one of our sovereign states, the state of New York. And he goes to that trial to speak for the criminal defendant who's defending himself against charges of having cooked the books in order to cover up hush money payments to a porn star. And that's just unbelievable for any speaker to do, much less a speaker who says that the Bible is the law of the land.
Before I let you go, I know you wanted to weigh in on a report from the Washington Post that talked about a meeting between Donald Trump and oil executives where he allegedly, according to the report, offered policy concessions if they raised $1 billion for his campaign. You want an investigation. You're pushing for an investigation. What in there is illegal? What do you think that he did that broke the law?
Well, we know that the ex-president pocketed nearly $8 million from foreign governments, including China, including Saudi Arabia and other autocratic regimes in violations of the Foreign Emoluments Clause when he was president. So this is a pattern for him. But now, amazingly, he goes to the CEOs and executives of gas and oil companies and says, you guys should raise me $1 billion because you're going to get a lot more back from me in everything that I'm going to give to you in terms of drilling rights and changing the pro-environment policies of the Biden administration. If that's not against the law, because he's only a candidate and not now the president, it should be against the law. In any event, we need to investigate what was very clearly a quid pro quo arrangement that was advanced by Donald Trump. Who remains a one-man crime wave.
Congressman, we will follow the investigation and see where it goes. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Really like him. Plain-spoken, and yet at the same time erudite. One-man crime wave, quid pro quo. His Nitwit Nero's entire life has been quid pro quo.
I wish I knew what those words meant. Is it got anything to do with the octopus? Is his? Can you grab him by the octopus? Quid? Quid ink? What?
Some answers might be forthcoming, even in the form of the outraged denials of the methinks they doth protest too much variety. And as Steve, presently in New York, said, I'm pretty sure old Larry Hogan is ovary deficient and therefore has nothing to say on abortion. Precisely. He is what Joanne Rowling or Robert Galbraith or whatever they're calling themselves these days would call a small gamete producer. It doesn't mean he's small. It means the small is modifying gamete and that. Never mind. Assuming he ever did. These people. But this this billion, this quid pro quo that Raskin was talking about, the biggest story this month, according to a tweet, hasn't been Trump's trial, but his corrupt pledge to big oil barons to destroy the environment if they give him $1 billion. Experts say a Trump win would cause $900 billion in climate damage. Elections matter, people. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And what he said earlier about democracy being on the ballot is terrifying, terrifyingly true. And there's a media failure here. Over at Media Matters for America, Allison Fisher noted with the release of Raskin's letters, Ms. Fisher said, unfortunately, over a four-day period, TV news broadcast and cable networks, with the exception of MSNBC, did not cover Trump's proposition to oil executives. And therein lies the problem. Well, how? For many of us, too many of us,
I don't care what he does as long as my gas prices come down so I can put it in my great big old four-wheel drive lift-kitted pick-em-up truck. My compensation truck.
And I don't mean workers' compensation. Ovary deficient. Emilio, going back to Judge Merchan's daughter. Manuel Merchan's daughter lives in a house. Corruption. Yeah, she's not living in an old refrigerator box over a sewer drain. Oh, well, we regret the error. The corrections department has something. Steve said, you called me Steve, currently in New York. I'll have you know, Ms. Democratic nominee for the Area 51 West Virginia House seat, that I'm still in Burlington. I don't return to my eventual former residence until tomorrow. Okay, we regret the error. Meanwhile, funny things are going on with regard to Trump media. It's still worthless stock, but somebody's playing games with it to make the price go up. Gee, I wonder who. Now there's an indication that, Nitwit Nero,
I'm a great businessman,
may have actually had his lunch money taken from him by a billionaire by the name of Jeff Yass, who runs something called Susquehanna International Group and has a 15% stake in the TikTok parent company ByteDance. And Gabriel Sherman, talking on Morning Joe, laid out the background on this Jeff Yass Queen character. And Mr. Sherman said that Nitwit Nero may have gotten played.
A special correspondent at Vanity Fair, Gabe Sherman, he joins the table, and you're looking into the strange, strained courtship of Donald Trump and mega donor Jeff Yass. Who is that? Earlier this year, Donald Trump appeared to be flip on his position on TikTok, the app owned by the Chinese company ByteDance, and posting on social media in March to warn against banning the platform. Compare that to his comments 4 years ago, shortly before announcing a ban on TikTok for, quote, impairing the national security of the United States. Take a look.
We're looking at TikTok. We may be banning TikTok. We may be doing some other things. There are a couple of options, but a lot of things are happening. So we'll see what happens. But we are looking at a lot of alternatives.
He at the time, he thought TikTok was a TBS game show that came on at 6:30 weeknights. But
Gabe, thought it was the metronome on the piano at Mar-a-Lago.
But Gabe, Donald Trump finds himself in this position where he actually is supporting the communist Chinese government, continuing to control political thought, especially of younger voters, while the rest of Washington is now saying, no, no, this is too dangerous for America to let the Chinese communist government.
Yeah.
Into our
it's a rare source of bipartisan agreement.
Right, exactly. But he shifted, and he shifted in part because of this huge dollar.
Yeah, I mean, Donald said, we'll see what happens. Well, what's happening is that Donald Trump needs money badly. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the campaign's real weak spots this cycle is a lack of major fundraising and donors. And Jeff Yass, who's a financier based in Pennsylvania, he's the largest single political donor this cycle, has yet to donate to Donald Trump's campaign. And what does Jeff Yass own? His firm is the single largest American investor in TikTok. So connect the dots. Donald Trump flips his position, throws his weight behind this investment, perhaps seeking to get a donation. This boils down to a very simple thing. Donald Trump looks at politics through the prism, what helps Donald Trump? It's not about ideology.
One man crime wave.
It is about what advances his own personal and financial agenda.
And so Jeff Yass went to Mar-a-Lago. They met. He met with Donald Trump at Palm Beach. A week later, Donald Trump puts out that post we saw on social media making the case to keep TikTok around. But I note that Mr. Yass is a libertarian and a never-Trumper.
Exactly.
Who spent a lot of money to buy ads to keep Donald Trump from winning. So is he really going to throw his support behind Trump?
Well, this is what's fascinating. You know, Jeff Yass came up through the world of professional gambling. That's kind of his framework for investing. And in gambling, you always try to play the sucker, right? So Jeff Yass has gotten Donald Trump to flip his position on TikTok to support his investment without having to donate to his campaign. I mean, who's the sucker?
I mean, that really points to how desperate the Trump campaign is. Because we keep hearing, right? You see the numbers.
Yeah.
People keep going, well, you know, I guess maybe some of the same people that do the New York Times Siena poll, but they go, you know, Donald Trump, he's got a lot of billionaires that are down at Mar-a-Lago.
Well,
they're behind the gates, and he's going to, you know what, it's all talk.
Yeah.
Because he's so desperate. They're pulling people in. You know, any billionaire they find on the street, they drag them in.
He only needs
and,
a few.
But anyway, this guy, though, again.
Wait, there are billionaires on the street? Where is this street? God, one of them's got to be progressive or liberal or something. I mean, 1475 in the hole with a chance, thanks to Ralphs and her congratulatory challenge, to get down to 1425. Thank you, Ralphs. And hopefully somebody else will take you up, but someone will take you up on that. But dragging billionaires in off the streets. Do they just walk around in their English morning coats and their top hats saying haw, 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 and harumph? Is that the mating call of the billionaire? Harumph, harumph, harumph. Haw, haw, harumph, harumph, haw, haw.
He still hasn't given, has he?
No, he's not given. And as I report in my piece, his team says he doesn't plan to give. So again, he has all the leverage over Donald Trump. He's dangling his money.
Art of the deal.
Art of the deal.
Dangling his money to get Trump to flip on TikTok.
John Heilman.
Just give me a sense that you're, Deb, you spend a lot of time thinking about Trump and money, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a really good example. It's like, Yass is almost like kind of trumping Trump at this point, right? Because he's going to betray him if, on the basis of your reporting.
Yeah,
he was like Chris.
Wait a minute, Yass? I've seen all rich people turn. No singing, Roxanne.
Christie's camp. He's been at Ray's camp. Is this the greatest sign of Trump's desperation financially, or do you know of other things that are illustrative of the fact of how desperate Trump is in financial terms heading into the general election?
He was selling Bibles, we know.
Yes.
Selling sneakers. So again, between his legal bills and his campaign's anemic fundraising.
When they put it like that,
this is, as Joe said, a sign of desperation. You know, Joe Biden's campaign has something on the order of $100 million more on cash on hand than the Trump campaign.
Go ahead.
Could you at least take one of us with you where you're going next? And please let that person be me.
Yeah. No.
Taking my two kids. I think you were talking about going to Cannes on Friday.
You're taking your kids instead of me.
I'm taking my kids.
Tell our viewers if you will.
That's the only reason why you couldn't swap one kid out for you.
Exactly.
Tom
Brady would. Could you tell us why you're going to
Cannes? Very excited. I wrote a movie about Donald Trump's rise in New York City in the 1970s and his relationship with Roy Cohn. It's called The Apprentice, reclaiming that title.
Uh-huh.
And it's a character study about the formative years where Donald Trump became Donald Trump.
And he learned at the feet of
his master, Roy Cohn, who taught him everything he's using today.
It is still hard to believe, Willie, that when you're looking at, is it Turning Point? Is that the Netflix series on the Cold War? And you're looking at these 1950s pictures of Roy Cohn.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
In the middle of McCarthyism. And it's still hard to connect something that happened that long ago with a guy who is channeling Roy Cohn every day in front of our eyes in Manhattan.
It is. He's at the middle of that timeline. Reaches back to the McCarthy hearings and forward to Donald Trump, although he's long since dead. But to Donald Trump of 2024 and never apologize,
never surrender,
always be on the offensive.
Now, how far do you go up to the point where Roy Cohn got AIDS and Donald Trump dropped him as a friend?
It's the whole relationship. Okay. Yeah. So
that is what happened, right?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Look forward to that.
Very intimate character
Congratulations.
Study. Congratulations. Can't wait for you to see it.
I cannot wait. And by the way, Lily Gladstone was asked at Cannes press conference yesterday about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think I was grateful. They said, let's keep an open heart and open mind and just judge the movie as a film, as a piece of art.
It's art. Yep. There you go. Vanity Fair special correspondent.
Okay, I confess, I'm somewhat intrigued. If it lays out how Nitwit Nero became the crook that he is, I want to see this. Flavio with a note. So basically, sitting Congress critters, senators and representatives can go and help Tangerine Tiberius violate the gag order, and how is this not a crime? Does this fall under the speech and debate clause now? No, it most assuredly does not. This is, I'm sure that's the fig leaf they'll try to use, and their argument is tiny enough that it might, they might think it'll cover. But that's up to Judge Merchan. And if he decides to not play along, shit could get real, real fast. But the thing is, it won't cover the crooked politicians, Flavio. They are not subject to the gag order. What they may be doing is sending their orange god emperor to Rikers Island. Because if he just finds him some more, Nitwit Nero will just make the little trolls give him the money. Uh-oh, I mentioned squids and octopi. A cephalopoid point of view. Where do I begin? First, let me introduce myself. I'm star Squidman center fielder for the Fighting Cephalopods. I find recent comments on your program a little disturbing. God, first it was the Keebler orcs and now I've got the cephalopods pissed at me. Squidney Powell is not related to us in any way, so please quit referring to her as such. As well as this rhetoric you're reporting on, can we find a way of describing it a little better? After all, little Timmy is listening while he's drawing up his ballpark, which is turning out beautifully, I might add, Anyway, you should know I have three hearts, and I tell you from the bottom of all three of mine that anti-cephalopod rhetoric will not be tolerated. Yours truly, Star Squidman, center fielder for the Fighting Cephalopods. And, you know, he really does, I know, I've looked at his stats. He hits for the cycle quite often. Mm-hmm. You might expect that of an octopus center fielder. And contrary to public opinion, there are actual things happening in Congress. I know, hard to believe. But we haven't had a Jim Jacket Off Jordan spotting for a while. And, well, he's trying to do his own fair share of toe kissing. So today, the Weaponization of the Government Committee had one of its little meetings. Yeah, that's actually the House Judiciary Committee, but, well, we're talking about Jim Jacket Off Jordan. And Stacey Plaskett, who is from the Virgin Islands, lit him up.
Thank you for joining. 2 weeks ago in the same room, we watched as the Republican majority attempted to use the congressional hearing process to intervene in an ongoing Supreme Court case. Republicans here did so by suggesting that they were concerned about how social media companies are bullied by the federal government. In truth, these arguments are operating in the interests of securing an open season where Russia and China can destabilize our democracy at will in the 2024 election. By my Republican counterparts causing people to bully social media companies, they want to allow any and all foreign adversaries to dump lies and misinformation on social media in support of a would-be fascist former president. And now you're back. Why are we back this time? We're here because former President Trump is on trial in New York. That's why we're here. On Monday and Tuesday of this week, his former attorney, Michael Cohen, delivered devastating testimony implicating former President Trump in a hush money payment scheme. His former attorney even had audio recordings of Trump talking about those payments. Whether we think the trial in New York is a good case or a bad case, the truth remains that the facts in the case don't help Donald Trump. We're here because Donald Trump knows that the evidence against him is plentiful and that the testimony of his literal, as my teenage daughter says, literal partner in crime in this case is harmful to his criminal defense and his political prospects. It's not that complicated. The truth hurts. And here's one. We all know that the former president exacts loyalty from all of his followers, and especially GOP officials and those that work for him. Blind loyalty. And this case is no different. Many of them have hightailed it to New York City to show him that they are with him and standing with Donald Trump. Trump, in turn, demands that every Republican official serve him like the incorrigible, degenerate, spoiled brat that he is, and use their positions to aid his criminal defense. And even after the embarrassment of recent hearings today, Donald Trump and his cronies don't think that the chairman is doing enough. We're here today simply because Donald Trump's sycophants have been taunting the members of this committee on the GOP side and judiciary Republicans for not doing anything tangible to defend Trump against our judicial system. Lackeys like Natalie Winters, a Trump loyalist and an executive producer for Steve Bannon's show, have been mocking Chairman Jordan's leadership of the committee openly.
Ooh.
As you can see up there, when the House Judiciary tweeted, "Imagine actually believing Michael Cohen," she retweeted and said, "Imagine actually believing at GOP, at Judiciary GOP will do anything about it." Just as one example, on Monday, she put that tweet up, and then Fox's Maria Bartiromo and Steve Bannon himself have gotten into the act. And here they are.
Why aren't you being louder about this? Why aren't I hearing anything from this committee? I had to just ask you about it, okay? We are, just let me be clear. Viewers are sick and tired of hearings. They're sick and tired of letters. They're sick and tired of hearing complaints. They want action. President Trump is in.
Good God, her voice. Forgive me. Because, well, voices. But God, she makes me want to run an ice pick through my ear. Zzz.
In a trial all day long, every day in New York City. Where is this committee of weaponization, and what are you doing about it? I just spoke with Kevin Hassett, the former chairman of the White House Economics Council, and he said, make no mistake, if we see President Trump go to jail because he violated this gag order, markets will react. Okay, Congressman, we're losing the country. So with all due respect, I'm not blaming you specifically, but it's not enough to set up a committee that's called the weaponization of federal government. That's not doing it for anybody. We want to hear more from you. We want to hear action. We want to know what the heck is going on in this New York trial where nobody
we want to hear
to
action.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm specifically doing.
Okay. No, I don't need to hear a backbencher. I'm sure you're a good guy, and I'm sure you're trying to do a lot, but it's not, as Maria Bartiromo says, and man, she lit him up.
We all heard her.
Probably won't be hearing much from him pretty soon. He may be toddling off to prison soon. The man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells. All that money and can't groom. Go figure.
Not enough to set up a committee just called the weaponization of the federal government. That's not doing it. We want action. And that's why we're here today. We're here at the beck and call of Trump fanatics and talking heads on cable and internet talk shows in the MAGA world.
Good God, imagine how emasculating that must be. Yeah, you're right, Steve in Burlington. Maria Bartiromo, beautiful voice made for print, absolutely. She's, good God, if she sang a duet with, what was his name? Hacksaw Sour? Was that his name? It make cats yowl all across, all around the great globe. Willful degenerate. Emilio says, "I'm outraged. She forgot psychopath, brain-addled, and putrid farter." Well, aren't they all kind of by definition putrid, unpleasant? Almost got through the first hour of the program without... No, I mentioned the hairy orange toe earlier. Who am I trying to kid? Yeah. So, dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone is kind of trashed.
Who, like Bartiromo and Bannon, have goaded this committee to act. Because the purpose of this select committee is, in fact, to be an arm of the Trump campaign and take his orders.
With what she said, Stacey Plaskett, Jim Jordan must be... How emasculating for him to be told that you're just a little puppet, that you have no independent agency, that you are much like a toilet plunger, just a tool And even as tools go, nobody's fond of you. Ugh.
And yes, we know your mad things are not going your way. Republicans are upset because the Justice Department has determined that it must prosecute Donald Trump because the allegations against President Biden amount to nothing, both at the Justice Department and even in this chamber in the House, by the very committees Republicans created to investigate President Biden. This committee and Republicans are mad because Robert Hur, himself a Republican political appointee, fully and completely exonerated President Biden while specifically outlining, a Republican appointee, outlining the reasons that Donald Trump deserved to be prosecuted and President Biden does not.
God, she's good. If it wasn't for the fact that he's Jim Jacket off Jordan, I'd almost feel bad for him. But I don't. Oh, no, not at all. And then, well, there's my personal hero, Jasmine Crockett, who, during a hearing today, that same weaponization committee. Good God, the Democrats are so much better at this. I know we suck at messaging and everything, but God, it's like fish in a barrel with these Democrats. They can just destroy. I mean, wow. So Jasmine Crockett was asking the witness about Nitwit Nero's lawyers. She asked Jill Wine Banks, and a former Watergate prosecutor, if she knew of, how things had been going for Nitwit Nero's former lawyers. Just curious to know, she said, as we're talking about lawyers and the obligations of lawyers and whether or not maybe the former president has any idea of what good lawyer obligations look like. And asked Ms. Winebanks, had she heard of Robert Cheley or Kenneth Cheesebro or Jeffrey Clark or Matthew DiPerno, John Eastman, Jenna Ellis, Rudy Giuliani, Julie Holler? And Jill Winebanks responded, yeah, I know who they are. They've all been charged. They've all been disbarred or suspended. Jasmine Crockett replied, who has her own law license, replied, oh, yeah. Okay, so they've had some issues, but these are the handpicked lawyers for Trump. And then at the same table was a former lawyer for Nitwit Nero named Jim Trusty. He bailed out of the classified documents case right after Tangerine Tiberius was, I want to make sure I pronounce this properly, indicted. I'm assuming you all have never been Trump lawyers, Mr. Trusty and Mr. Costello. And Trusty said, no, ma'am, I was his lawyer for a year. At which point Jasmine Crockett looked at him and said, oh, you still have your bar card? not even pretending anymore. Lord. By the way, we're into the second hour of the program. If anybody would like to engage in some conversation, you are more than welcome to call. The stress line is, of course, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And you can get in via Skype at Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. That is the Skype line. If you've never sent me a contact request, do so, and we'll be chatting merrily away. Then there's 304-574-8178, and that rings into the same place. It all comes through. And the news broke that Nitwit Nero has accepted two debate invitations, June 27th before the Republican National Convention, and September the 10th. Well, now. Brett Mycelis asked the, well, must ask question. What excuse will Trump come up with right before the debate to back out of participating? Because there will be one. Trump is not up to the challenge of a debate, one individual wrote. I suspect June 23rd, Trump will come up with his excuse. I like the idea of Biden going ahead and debating an empty podium. Another said, will Trump crush Biden by telling that hilarious Hannibal Lecter anecdote during the debates? Even that, which he brought out last weekend in New Jersey, was a retread. He's been telling that since, like, October of 2023. And there seemed to be a consensus on my filthy morning habit today that the debate, such as it is, will not go well for his shambolic orangeness.
They're going to side with Joe Biden. Not quite sure Donald Trump and his team feel the exact same way. I guess we'll have to wait and see what they actually say.
All right. Communication director for the Biden-Harris campaign, Michael Tyler. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
Just one thing that raises, again, another question that has to be, now that I think about it, has to be decided, is who's going to sponsor, who's going to air these debates.
Right. How
does, you know, the commission in the past has decided which network is going to get
right.
which debate. That's going to be another item on the table. Does Fox News get a debate? Do they not? These will all be things
that
will get
litigated. Or maybe it's a cross-all. So, Willie, let me read this from the New York Times story by Jonathan Swan and Maggie Haberman. The Biden campaign has proposed rules including, I love this, automatic cutting off of microphones to ensure Mr. Trump does not blow through his time limits and talk over Biden as he did relentlessly during their first debate in 2020. Quote, there should be time limits for answers and alternate turns to speak so that the time is evenly divided and we have an exchange of views, not a spectacle of mutual interruption. Ms. O'Malley Dillon writes in the letter, a candidate's microphone should only be active when it is his turn to speak to promote adherence to the rules and orderly proceedings. I mean, I would say, who in the world could be against that other than Donald Trump? Because they're saying,
he's going to call it a gag.
Let's play by the rules. Everybody gets an equal amount of time. Nobody gets to interrupt the other. We get to actually have people talking about ideas.
And on paper, that is what the debates are supposed to be, and
right.
absolutely never are.
Never.
They turn into that spectacle you're describing there. Donald Trump cannot agree to these terms because he will be steamrolled in that format. He can't carry on with no audience cheering him on without a friendly moderator. He cannot win that debate on the merits, on the issue. So he also doesn't like being having the terms of a debate dictated to him. He's not going to say, sure, I'll agree to all that. Let's do it, even though he said anytime, any place. So I'll be interested to see what his counteroffer is if he really wants to debate Joe Biden.
I mean, this is a guy who's dodged so many debates, Mika, during the Republican. As Joe Biden said, he hasn't debated anybody since 2020. Because he lost those two debates, I guess, and he didn't want to debate the Republicans.
Well, we'll see if the Trump campaign has a response anytime soon about this, but I agree with the table. I don't think he's going to let this happen to himself because it's too scary for him.
Yeah.
It's too fair. It's actually a debate.
It's actually fair.
He can't win that, but he could loudmouth his way through a situation.
He's never done that before.
No, except for every morning and every afternoon when he comes in and out of court. Coming up, as the president alluded to in his campaign announcement, today is one of the rare weekdays when Donald Trump is not in a New York courtroom. We'll recap Michael Cohen's testimony there yesterday. And what's ahead for tomorrow when Morning Joe comes right back?
And go to break. Oh, wait, there was a little bit more. Clip from President Biden.
Seconds.
Donald Trump lost two debates to me in 2020. Since then, he hadn't shown up for debate. Now he's acting like he wants to debate me again. Well, make my day, pal. I'll even do it twice. So let's pick the dates, Donald. I hear you're free on Wednesdays.
Ooh! There's got to be a drag queen somewhere in the White House, because Joe Biden is getting some serious shade throwing instruction. And let's run over to the Skype line. Goodness gracious, we haven't heard from him in a while. It's Tristan. Hey, Tristan.
Hey, what's up, Robin? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I just got done eating the Monte Cristo sandwich.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, it's the best. There's this place in Seattle called Sean O'Donnell. Sean O'Donnell's Pub. It's the only place I've been able to find a genuine Monte Cristo sandwich. Fucking powdered sugar, coated with fucking some sort of jam. I don't know what flavor it was, but it was fantastic.
Hey, it's often raspberry, and I'm busily crushing up metformins to snort a few rails just thinking about it.
Oh, I know. Oh, it was wonderful. This is my second one for the month of May, so we're rolling along. Quite, you know, me, calorie conscious as I am. But yeah, no, it's great. It's got up to 72 today.
Ooh, positively tropical for Seattle.
Oh yeah, oh certainly. Yeah, you know, for a whole month of March, Mother Nature couldn't decide whether it was spring or winter. It always happens that way here. There's like that in-between season where it's just like, do I bring my coat? Do I not?
But now things are settling in. The blackberries are blooming. And
oh, yes. Yes, and you know, my birthday is coming up soon, and I just told my family, I was like, you know what? Screw chocolate. I want a blackberry pie.
Ooh, that would be so good.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, but it's been a while. Things have been a bit crazy over the last few months.
Well, and I apologize that I didn't write back, but you wrote and said you were going through some stuff, and I didn't want to further burden you.
No, that's perfectly fine.
But I'm just glad. I hear a vibrancy in your voice that I'm glad is there.
It's the Zoloft. But it's working. It's working wonders, and you know, I've never felt like that before in my life, and it was because I was unwise and I quit antidepressants cold turkey, and I paid the price for it, and well, I learned my lesson. So, it happens that way sometimes.
Yeah, but hopefully it won't happen again.
No, I'm going to do everything in my goddamn power to make sure it doesn't, because that was scary, my friend. I don't even have any words. Well, I do, but not that I'm going to share here, but it was, oh, man. You know, I thought I was resilient before. Oh, my God. Oof. But, you know, just gives you it gives me a new perspective on how we can't even take simple things like sleep for granted, you know?
Believe me, I know, yes, I get that.
And, you know, when your brain is fucking up and not letting you get very good sleep, and it really starts to wear on you, and you start to, I was a nervous wreck for a couple months. So
I'm so sorry you had to go through all of that.
I appreciate that. It's, you know, it's all about the learning for me. And it seems like my life is kind of full of really hard lessons. I I'm one of those people who's like, oh, well, don't touch the hot stove. I'm going to touch the hot stove anyway.
Yeah, don't lick your finger and stick it in the light socket and turn it on.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Right, and away I go.
Yeah. Flying high. Forget the crash. But, you know, I've been a little out of the loop lately, so, but I've been listening to your program once again, and, you know, first of all, why does Trump always choose lawyers with goofy-ass names? I mean, Jim Trusty? That's stranger than fucking fiction.
Hold on. You get a ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong. In fact, there was a previous Steve in New York, in Burlington, I'm so sorry, suggested a ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong for Biden saying, I hear you're free on Wednesdays, and you still have your bar card. Those were restaurant quality.
Well, zingers, yeah. I don't understand it. Yeah, you know, did John Truthy resign? I mean, good God. It just doesn't even make any sense. And of course, you remember John Lauro. Talk about a fucking voice made for print.
You're talking about Hacksaw?
Yeah.
There at the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
Yeah, my ears are still bleeding. You're right. Where does he find these guys? Does he just is there a direct? It's for, you know, for nationally for lawyers. There's a listing called Martindale Hubbell.
Yeah.
And is there a listing for derpy Trump lawyers? It's like found in hell rubble. I mean, if it was just counsel for the parking garage, Alina Havana Havana Havana, it would be enough. But this is—he's got enough to field a football team with nobody playing both ways.
Might as well just open a can of compressed air and have it represent him. But you know, it's just. Yeah, like, you just can't make this shit up, you know, and you get the wrong person reading it, and they're going to set themselves on fire, and gosh.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, you talk about you can't make this stuff up. It's I mentioned that we were in Beckley earlier today, and there is a chain restaurant there. It's owned by the same folks who own Olive Garden, the same restaurant group. It's called Cheddar's. And oddly enough, we were driving past it today, and I looked over and said, "Hey, you want to go to Cheddar's for lunch?" And then I said, "I kind of got a hankering for their Monte Cristo sandwich because they've got a great Monte Cristo."
Ah.
And then you call in, and you're, "Oh, hey," and it's you know, Roxanne and Tristan talk about Monte Cristo sandwiches. I mean, the universe is an amazing place.
There's synchronicity, isn't that the right word?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and it's also an album by The Police.
Right, and it's a concept first introduced by Carl Gustav Jung.
Yes. It is amazing, you know, and I've noticed it so many times in my life, you know. Random ass pieces of information that I come across, people start referencing it, and I'm like, huh. And then it sends you down a rabbit hole, and you're like, you know, maybe I can get Monte Cristo's shipped in dry ice to my door.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, so for those who don't know, it's like ham and turkey and cheese, and it's a triple-decker sandwich, and it's battered and deep-fried, and it's got powdered sugar and often raspberry jam or some other sort.
Yeah, sometimes they put maple syrup on it.
Ooh, I've never had it that way.
Oh, yeah. They gave it to me last time. The same restaurant gave it to me last time, but they like, forgot it this time. I don't know. I just got the jam. But either way, it was still fantastic, and I'm still reeling from the experience in a good way. Even their fries are good. Nice, crispy, salty fries.
You're killing me, Tristan.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. That happens when we move into food porn territory.
Oh, yes, 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 indeed. And my friend's been teasing me about getting me chocolate fondue because he knows how much I fucking hate it. I can't stand that shit. But
really?
I told him, yeah, well, there was this woman on my Facebook who got one, and I was telling him about it. Like I asked her, I was like, why did they give it to you? Because I just never understood liquefied chocolate, like chocolate covered fruit and stuff. I just never understood that. Like, I don't know. I'm a weirdo, but. Yeah,
oh, I remember all those years ago being on that live boat cruise, and they had a chocolate volcano or chocolate fountain or something. And
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, it just sounds all so off. I mean, I like chocolate, but I only like it in certain forms, like covered with toffee or chocolate covered pretzels.
Now, have you done the chocolate covered potato chips yet?
Oh yes, yes, those are good too. Those are fantastic. It has to be nuanced sort of chocolate, not like pure milk chocolate covered in, yeah, no.
I love dark chocolate.
Oh, that's good stuff. Yeah, 90% cacao. Remember my brother was like, I bought a chocolate bar from a store, and he took a bite, and he was like, oh, that tastes like shit, man. And I'm like, damn, you're missing out on the healthy compounds.
I don't know. Weird things happen. My taste buds changed. And definitely more into dark chocolate now.
Yeah. Yeah, mine too. Honestly, like, I used to love chocolate. I used to love Three Musketeers and Hershey, like the pure Hershey milk chocolate. Now I just can't. I just keep feeling my teeth rot every fucking time I eat one. So it's just. It's sensory overload.
Well, you know, we moved into the second hour, so dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone is now trashed alongside with the Eastern, so yeah. Good on you, Tristan.
Oh, no problem. I already had a Monte Cristo, so I'm good. And I'm not in Chicago, although I did get myself some home run in-style pizza, but anyway.
Is that casserole-style pizza?
No, but I have some of that, too. Home Run Inn is like the tavern style, thin crust.
Ooh.
It's a little thicker than traditional thin crust, but it's definitely not a casserole. It's like a regular traditional pizza.
Yeah, that Chicago style deep dish stuff.
Yeah, no, it's not that. Although I love that too. Not to get too serious, but I've been.
Please do.
I've been. This experience has left me very confused, and I guess like maybe it was me, but I started to appreciate what genuine suffering is like, and I got a glimpse of what oppression is, like real oppression. You know, as a disabled person, of course, I deal with oppression a lot, but, you know, I was at a psych ward for a week, and the stuff that I saw there, it made me think a lot about my own history and my own, you know, growth politically and socially. And it's just really confusing, and it's hard for me to articulate, but maybe you can help me out with this. How is it that so many people in the media landscape can speak about these horrors that happen to people, and yet they have absolutely no idea what it's like to actually experience it?
I think the people who are professional journalists are told that they have to, you know, there's this the sacredness of objectivity. And so they have to be objective and stick the microphone in some suffering human being's face and say, tell us how it feels.
Yeah.
I mean, Don Henley nailed it long, long ago with that song Dirty Laundry. The bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. It's interesting when people die. Give us dirty laundry.
Yeah, yeah, and all these pundits who talk, you know, who talk about these things, and, you know, I know, you know, like, how else are we going to get information, but it's just, every time I turn on a news program now, it just seems so impersonal, and maybe it's always been that way, I've just become more sensitive because of the experience I had, but it's just,
I don't think there's a better example than, say, you know, when a tornado blows through somewhere in Oklahoma-stan or Alabama-stan and the professional journalists parachute in with their cameras and microphones and stick a camera in the face of someone whose entire world has just been reduced to rubble and say, how's it feel? And as often as not, people like that are in shock. And they'll say something like, well, I'm just grateful to Jesus because I'm here and he saved me. While their neighbor down the street is deader than Pharaoh's cat because they were in the wrong place relative to the tornado.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Mark Twain taught that lesson well in his piece, The War Prayer. When he said, when the messenger from the Most High tells the congregation, realize that when you pray for rain, you're also praying for drought on someone else's land. Or when you pray for rain for your crops, you're praying for a rainstorm that will drown your neighbors.
Yep.
Compassion, at least in theory, should not be difficult.
Yeah.
But it often is.
It is. And you even look at, like, more high-profile cases, like when Michael Jackson died and Larry King was bothering the shit out of Jermaine. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
He just wouldn't stop. Larry, my brother just died, man. Like, I gotta process this. Well, we just want to know what you're going through, man. Like, yeah.
Well, yeah, it sucks. Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. Go
but,
away.
But I think Tristan, and you know, you're so good at this. You raise issues that don't necessarily come immediately to mind, but once we get going, we find out that it's actually kind of central to a lot of the stuff we talk about. There is a political party in this country for whom compassion, sympathy, and empathy are signs of weakness.
Yep.
And they revel in the suffering of others. And they try to impose that suffering on others.
Yep.
You know, so that they can own the libs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and all on the cloak of this so-called conservatism, which it's not.
No, it isn't. Steve Schmidt or one of those guys said, the cruelty is the point.
Yeah.
And that's a hell of a way to go through life, reveling in the suffering of others, because sooner or later, whether you believe in the formal tenets of karma and you're Hindu or whatever, cause and effect is real, or it certainly seems so to our human brains. And somewhere down the road, look, Nitwit Nero is begging for compassion in his hateful way. I mean,
yeah.
it's a hell of a note that compassion manifests this way, but he's got people wearing diapers outside their clothing to his rallies to demonstrate their sympathy and compassion for him.
Oh, man. What did I miss?
Oh, no, you don't know? Yeah, there are guys walking around, you know, middle-aged, pasty-faced, doughy white guys walking around now with their red ball caps, only instead of the ball cap saying, Make America Great Again, or Trump, these red hats say, Real Men Wear Diapers.
Uh-huh. Oh, a lot can be said about that.
I mean, incontinence is a problem, and it's something a lot of people deal with.
Yeah.
That's why the products exist.
Sure.
And it's, you know, it's just a fact of life.
Yep.
It's not like, say, well, this may be so old that maybe you don't remember it, maybe you're too young, but the former senator from Louisiana, Stan. Diaper Dave
David
Vickers.
Somebody. Yeah.
That dude was said by the sex workers with whom he interacted to have that kind of a fetish.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay. But the thing with Trump is that if Noel Kanzler is to be believed, it has everything to do with his ongoing abuse of Adderall.
Right. Yep, that's it. And now it's become like a rallying cry. Yeah, that's certainly, you know, a very worrying cult of personality. And like I told you in that message I sent about the guy who killed himself, you know, Max Azzarello or whatever his name is. You know, we're becoming like a puppet communist country, or more a puppet fascist country.
Very much so.
And, I have been out of the loop. I didn't know people were starting to do that. That's just so crazy.
And some of them are gold, like the sneakers that he's trying to sell?
Yeah, right.
Gold lame shiny dighties.
Oh boy!
With real men, with Trump or Real Men Wear Diapers emblazoned across the back to own the libs.
Yeah. You don't think they're gonna go as far as they go until they go further?
Exactly.
It's like you keep pulling the string, and the string's gonna keep. You know. Yeah, that's. Boy, I don't even know. You know, and you get to thinking how, you know, how we got here. And, of course, you and I both know how we got here. It didn't start with Trump. It's not going to end with Trump. We've had a conservative streak running through this country ever since colonial times.
Certainly.
We just have to acknowledge that, right? People don't want to talk about how horrible people in this country were.
Well, that's what, and one of the things that's undertaught is the purge of colonists who were pro the crown.
Yeah.
There were horrible things done in Philadelphia. And a lot of the Canadian inhabitants, citizens who live up in the Atlantic provinces, are there because they fled the colonies down here to get up there to keep from being killed.
They certainly don't talk about that, and they don't talk about the fact that the people who founded this country long ago, Puritans. Wanted to kill Catholics. That was a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, so I think, you know, that has to be acknowledged, that we have you know, a vicious, vicious streak in this country. And it's, you know, Trump is a symptom of hundreds of years of this permissiveness. And almost, I mean, I hate to say it, but always in my mind, conservatism, or so-called conservatism, has always been associated with, like, the American ideal. That's how far woven it is into our culture now.
Oh, yeah, American exceptionalism in that light? Sure.
Yep.
And, you know, you mentioned the Puritans wanted to kill Catholics. It's not, it wasn't just them. I mean, I think about our dear friend Charlene in Rogues Island. And that was literally Rogues Island. Those were people who fled Massachusetts Puritan tyranny in order to be able to worship in their own way. And they weren't Catholic.
Yeah, no, they were not.
They were, you know, they were just different flavors of Protestant.
That's right.
And, of course, all of this is driven in to one degree or another, I've always thought, by Calvinism.
Oh, yes.
Because Calvinism says God will manifest whether he loves you by whether or not he makes you rich.
Yeah, that's a big one. So,
and
yeah,
this being prayer meeting Wednesday, we can certainly bring that up, you know. I don't think it's improper.
Yes, of course. Oh, goodness, it is Wednesday, isn't it? I'm like losing track of the days.
I understand. Sometimes they all roll into each other for me, too. It's like,
you know,
these last couple of weeks have just been a blur, you know, trying to get to the primary election and hoping I made it past.
Right. Yeah. So are you the nominee? Did I hear that right?
Yes, he did. I beat my deceased opponent by 58 votes.
Well, congratulations.
Hey, look, a win's a win. It goes in the W column.
Yeah. No, that's impressive. This is the same seat you ran for, what, 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Are you running against the incumbent? Or?
No, the incumbent is the bigot that I mentioned who is now going to be a circuit judge.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
He left that seat vacant, and I'll be facing a MAGA man in November whose claim to fame is that apparently Nitwit Nero is his god.
Well, you know, typical for West Virginia, unfortunately, but I'm sure you've got a fighting chance.
I think if we can make this election about the hard fought, hard won, and now stolen rights of women, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, if you can stick with that, I think people will become active, you know, and I think people already are. As messed up as things are, I think the liberals are finally starting to come out of the woodwork.
I sure hope so. It's about daggum time.
Well, you're telling me. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, like I said, as messed up as Trump and his cronies have been, you know, it's almost sort of a godsend. As long as we can actually vote the way I think we can, because, you know, this is the most important election in my lifetime. And
like Jamie Raskin said in that clip earlier, democracy is on the ballot.
Yep, it is.
We can choose people who support the idea of democracy, or we can vote for MAGAs.
That's right. You know, we've never had to face this choice before, but now this is where we're at, and people have to start tuning into reality before it's too late.
And, you know, talking about the, you know, treason, insurrection, no democracy, whatever. One of the, I guess we'll call it a good outcome, I don't know, from last night here in West Virginia is that a young maggot creep by the name of Derek Evans was defeated by incumbent Congresswoman Crazy Carol Cat Lady Miller. And, you know, she's as maggot as they come. She even voted in 2020 to not certify the election, so that tells you where and who she is.
Yeah.
But Derek Evans was actually, he actually pled guilty, threw himself on the mercy of the court for having participated in the domestic terror attack of January 2021 on the United States Capitol. And did the contrition dance in front of the judge at sentencing, got 3 months of federal time out of it, and then started referring to himself as a political prisoner when he, the dipshit, entered a guilty plea. I mean,
haven't you talked about it before?
Yeah. Well, he lost yesterday.
Well, that's good.
That's one less insurrectionist going to Congress, although I don't think you would exactly classify Carol Miller as pro-democracy.
No, don't think so.
But yeah, she thumped him pretty good. I think beating him by more than half as many votes. I will, of course, be voting for the Democratic nominee. And, wishing the best. Because, this state's not going to go anywhere under continued maggot rule. They're just wrecking the place because they like breaking things. Oh, and by the way, going back to our Monte Cristo discussion, it would seem that Brother Deacon Asa, who is not all that far from you, is letting his inner sarcasm run riot. Yeah, it could be synchronicity, Robin, or it could be that more than one person can think about a Monte Cristo sandwich at one time. In fact, it happens so often that the restaurants thought it would be a good idea to put the Monte Cristo sandwich on their menu. Smart ass. And added, but this might prove applicable to you. So too, the Silver Cloud Inn serves a mighty respectable Monte Cristo at their lobby restaurants in and around Seattle, Portland. Silver Cloud Inn.
I'm going to look that up.
I thought you might.
Yeah, always welcome another Monte Cristo in Seattle. Oh, my goodness.
Is that like a Seattle thing?
No, actually, because I do read about the history of the food that I eat.
It's okay. We're nerds. We can talk about that.
Right. So I think it was made in the 20s. Like in the 20s, there was some hotel or other that had perfected the, because it's basically a variation of the French croque monsieur, which is a ham sandwich. Yeah, which is a ham sandwich with cheese on top, essentially. That's baked in an oven for like 10 minutes or so. Anyway, and then I guess it became really notable when Disneyland's Blue Bayou restaurant started serving them back in the 60s. That's how it became an iconic sandwich. So it's definitely not unique to Seattle. In fact, it's hard to find one in Seattle. That's why I'm glad to know of a second place.
Yeah, the Silver Cloud Inn. Also, going back to journalists and their objectivity, I had a note from Cynthia in the Bay Area. She said, I had a cameraman for a local journalist tell me that he had PTSD from the shit he saw and experienced while helping to cover the local news. I'm sure your mileage will vary, but I don't think these people aren't affected by it. They are, or at least a cameraman I talked to had a terrible time with it all. Yeah, those folks do. It's the ones who just sit on the set and read the teleprompter.
It's not pleasant. It's to have to see all that stuff and to have to be a witness to it and not be able to do anything.
Well, it is. It absolutely is.
And that's why it's been really hard for me, to reconnect with the news lately, because it's just been, even on the progressive side, some of those people, I've heard Stephen Burlington now, is that right?
Until tomorrow. He will eventually be Stephen Burlington full time, I think.
Oh, Burlington is a cool-ass city. Never been there, but I'd love to go. You know, I know he's talked about the majority report, and like, I don't know, I kind of have to agree with him. Those guys are such, I just can't stand them, you know, and they make progressives all around look bad with their ignorant takes on things, lack of experience, and I'm not gonna trash them for the rest of the program, but I just, you know, I have to say that it's not just those journalists. Some people on our site do it too, and it's just, yeah, I don't like it.
Well, and let's bear in mind there, you know, there is a distinct disconnect between journalism and opinion.
True.
And this is that's where that break point is. You know, for all I know, there are people, oh, I can't stand to listen to that Robin Kincaid. Yeah. Because, you know, taste. It's a matter of taste.
No.
But I get your point, and what you just said, I would say the same thing about, I'm going to get in trouble, the Young Turks.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Because as I've gotten older, I understand that life is more complicated and nuanced. And that as a consequence, these people who purport to be the guardians of progressive purity, yeah, really, they're not.
Right. Well, and that's why I listen to you, Robin. Because, I mean, you walk the walk and you talk the talk. You've been through it, you know? You know what it's like to have, you know, disasters occur in your vicinity. And you know what it's like to have to get to safety, you know, like, you know what it's about. You know what we're fighting against. And they don't.
No, and you know, look, Tristan, privilege has a lot to do with it.
Sure.
You know, if you're insulated, if it never touches you, I mean, it's like that clip from Larry Hogan there, who's running for Senate in Maryland, saying, well, I've always had a very nuanced opinion. I ain't personally in favor of abortion, but I ain't going to get in the way anybody want one. Dude, you have no opinion at all. You don't deserve one. You have nothing to say about it, except that it is the right of a woman to have authority over her own body. Period.
Yeah. About as un-nuanced as you can get.
But here they are.
Yep. Well, and that's it. That's it. You know, people. Yeah. Well, and that's just what I've been talking about. It's been bothering me for a while. You know, how, you know, those of us on the left relating to a lot of the people on the left who are privileged. I mean, you know, to a certain extent, I'm privileged. I mean, you know, I live in a great part of the country, in a fantastic city, in a great neighborhood, and I pay the cheapest rent in the entire city of Seattle. Like, that's pretty fucking cool. But I've never lost sight of of how I got here and the support that it takes to sustain things like this. And it just seems like a lot of people, yeah, don't really get it even though they purport to actually get it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I really think you are.
Yes.
I'm so glad to know that you are out of the darkness, so to speak. And have found your way forward and found a way to continue going forward, because please do know, I mean, it's just a fact around here with this little community of ours that I worry.
Well, thank you.
I don't know, maybe it, and it's always been that way, because this is, you know, this has never felt like a spectacle or an entertainment. It's a conversation, and when we don't hear from people, I worry about people.
Yeah.
And others in this community worry about people.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. And, it means the world to me that I can come back here, pick up right where we left off. Even me being so new, I've appreciated it. And I've appreciated listening to your stories and hearing all the other people in the community talk about their experiences. You know, it gives me hope for the future. And, I'm going to keep on trucking and, tune in and check in when I can,
Well, I'm glad to know it, and I'm glad to know that you're back to a stable and reasonably happy existence. Just got a note from Jimmy, also in your area there, talking about the Monte Cristo. Originated in Paris, 1910, came to America in the 1930s, and it's a damn good sandwich. For me, it ranks up there with the Cuban. Yeah, the Cuban's really good. The ham, the Swiss, the pickle, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep. Couldn't agree more. Well, it's been nice talking with you, and I'll get off and let some other people speak.
Okie doke. Well, Tristan, don't be a stranger, okay?
All right. Same to you, Robin.
All right. You take care, my friend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Calling from Seattle, that's Tristan. I'm glad he checked in. It's like family here. And need a little check-in every now and then. By the way, Cynthia, if you're still there, you never told me how did the sous vide New York Strip come out? I can only imagine it was heavenly. Now, the Wiggling Pig up the road has beef tenderloin on sale for $17.87 a pound. That ain't gonna happen. I saw where they'd done two filet mignons about an inch and a half thick. Yeah, they were $35. So I guess those were about one pound filets. Whoa. And by the way, we are coming up on the third hour of the program. We're still a goose egg this evening. Ralph's has a challenge on the table of $25, celebrating my little victory last night. Thank you, Ralphs. I hope someone will meet that somewhere along the way. And in the meantime, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Roxanne. How are you?
I'm good, Wave. How are you?
Tremendous. I hate using that word, being this really big word that the Orange Cross uses. But first, and I'm going to try this out here on the horn. I'm going to cheer you down today on this prayer meeting Wednesday for a week.
Okay.
How much? What's your number?
Oh, the overall goal?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're $14.75.
Reverend Rufus, come up here. You're sure now. It's prayer meeting. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. Prayer meeting Wednesday. Now, congregation. Yes. Congregation out there, yes. Robin. Our new state senator, Robin. Roxanne Kincaid. She needs to be assured that her voice is out there. So, 1475. Now, that's just 100 people. 1475. That's 200 people. We don't want to be fixed in the math. 200 people, $9. Send your money in, send your pennies in, and your hate listeners. I know you're sitting there with your pants off and otherwise ungodly. Send that money in today. $14.75.
Wait a minute. You're sitting there with your pants off?
You don't want me to, but you know.
I know.
you're a bit of a pinup or sticky, as we said back at the ranch. Robin, today has been a beautiful day to a mixed two. For the first time, I think maybe three times, I'm calling you and I'm not shifting. In other words, I got the shift under control. I don't know if those are voices or people. And that's one of the first things that I, attracting me to your show, the way you shift voices. But two things. That verse in the Bible, when Jesus walked up to the man and he said, "Whoa, how many are you?" And they said, "Legion."
We are Legion.
I've always vibed it. I've always resonated with that. I like to think of myself as God's little Swiss Army knife, because I've always been able to elevate to almost any situation, and I don't speak on that from ego. It's actually the downside, not realizing what's going on. You start living in that personality, and it destroys your life. I had a situation at the hospital happen that I had to figure out. And I was like, "Oh, you misdiagnosed because the diagnosis you've had," which I've been coming out on the show bit by bit, it's wrong. So I'm mad at the fucker because he didn't talk to me, but that's just American medicine. You know, I'm lucky I got the 3 minutes I did, which is another thing pointing back to your show and the horn community, which 1475, which is why we have to persist. Where else would we go? What else would we do? Seriously. What else we got going on? Seriously. Because I don't know what I would do. I sit there like a cat chasing an invisible porn if you even have a rerun. God, like tomorrow, I literally don't know what I'm going to do. And that sounds like really taxi driver-ish, but I'll figure out something. But as I course and surf through other media, I'll miss you. And I'm sure we all will.
Well, I'm hoping I'm not going away.
No, you're not. No, now that we find you, we can't lose you. And something, a line from a movie. Have you seen Dune yet?
No, I have not.
Oh my God.
I could rent it on the small screen for like $22, and it's just no.
Watch it. Get it. Get it right now. Right now.
I can't.
It
do
is
that.
Such a beautiful movie. And you don't. Well, I sent you a link, and you just obviously. Anyways, it's such a beautiful movie. So well acted. The changes they made to the book work. And I bring that up because my favorite character in Dune has always been Leia the Knife. Because she was superhuman and crazy as fuck. She didn't have her memory melt or her lifetime melt done perfectly, and she didn't get trained for it, and now I hit her at once, and now she was batshit. You know that term, go with your gut feeling? Very basic.
Yeah.
Well, what if you have multiple gut feelings? You're all right. Nobody trained me or taught me how to deal with that. And that's why the heading is so bad. Because this is my circus. These are my monkeys. And that's another phrase I like. And I know exactly how to train them. But if the director's knocked out, then they just run wild. Where else would we have a conversation like this? You don't have a conversation like this in MAGA space. Are you fucking kidding me? We went from red hats to red diapers. That's coming. You know it's coming. By the early
stock. It's already here. It's already here. They got diapers in red and gold and Trump across the back and the American flag. And
they're adult diapers?
Yeah.
Wow, I thought it was just a hat that real men wear diapers. No, we went straight to the.
No, they're actually
parody.
Yeah, no, they're actually wearing them over their clothing.
Similar to the way we treat them, quick. Dogging off a little bit. Dun dun dun. But yeah, no, I wrote a thing on Reddit that says I always heard about the Antichrist, but I thought he'd be smarter. My God, he's stupid. Why is the Antichrist so stupid? That was it. I don't even know if I got any traction. I just have to figure that out loud.
That's the. I mean, if he is, he's a derpy one. But then again, there's a lot of derp out there, Wave. I've been referring to Leon Scum as a derpy Batman villain. You got Charlie Kirk out there. Who's like a Dick Tracy derpy villain, you know, Little Face.
They're all comic book villains. Every single one of them. Sluggo is Bannon, you know. Shiny Head is Stephen Miller. Yeah, oh shit, we're in a Dick Tracy comic. Holy shit. I mean, Trump makes sense in the Dick Tracy universe, doesn't he? It's about his timeline, too.
Who in the Trump orbit is Prune Face?
Oh wow, that's hard. Bill Barr.
Yeah, okay.
You got a squint, but not that much. And I'm not a exemplar of the Dick Tracy thing. I just always like the two-way communication watch, which I'm going, holy shit, I should get one of those now, because we live in that time. I feel like I just got back from a fucking 12-year vacation.
I was going to say, are you out and about now?
I'm on my phone. Number never changes in 25 years. So, yeah, no, I threatened to take a hostage, jump out a window, or hurt somebody to get out. I literally had to say that. And they let me out. And then I'd say I'm a journalist, which I am in a little bit. I don't have I'm not a credential journalist. But I see things, I take video, I write stuff down. That's a journalist, right?
That sounds like reporting.
And I do the whole both sides or multiple sides thing myself, so that's a little extra. But yeah, no, I sent you some weird ass clips. I really did. That you were totally on the whole Trump fucking up in court, and then Todd called in, and I didn't even care what I had to say. It's a Todd call. Come on, let's all lean back, put some corn in our mouths, and put some on the fire. Todd called, and that's how I felt. And when you're mad, in fact. And you don't like to dive into, you're such a fakey creature. Well, 6'4" of you. You don't like to dive in here. He's a muck. It's not you. Oh, and I looked through your election results this morning, like I was looking for the Panthers scoring. And I couldn't find it. Oh, damn it. And then when you said you won by 58 points, I shed one single man tear. Congratulations.
Hold on. 58 votes.
Yeah, I know.
There's a difference.
Doesn't matter, guys. Doesn't matter.
Basically,
doesn't matter. You won.
Yeah, I was. It was like 55% to 47%, something like that.
So, like 120 people voted. Holy shit!
No, it was. I think the total was somewhere around 700. Primary turnout was abysmal.
Okay. 700 people. Oh, you're moving on up. Nobody would even throw eggs at you the last time. Of course, eggs are so expensive now. Nobody's doing that anymore unless you fall in. Boom. But yeah, you won. The guy was dead, but that's fine. You won. And with one name on the thing, stranger things have happened. And to hear you go from Robert to Roxanne in state senate, when we find our true selves, big things happen, huh? Things we've always wanted to do anyway. I have the courage to be our true selves. I was literally listening to Tristan. Hey, Tristan, you have a very pleasing voice. You could do like infomercials and I'd buy whatever. Cause I'm like, Tristan sounds happy. I think I'm buying it. I don't know if that's a really capitalism 21st century.
I think he sold a few Monte Cristo sandwiches this evening, quite honestly.
I'm a 90% vegetarian now because of my hospital stay, but I was like, okay, how can I recreate a Monte Cristo vegetarian? What's in it? I was literally going, what's in one? Cause I was sold on Monte Cristo, Seattle, and just, whatever the Tristan, posse is doing today. And that's,
I mean, is there tofu bacon out there? Is there tofu ham?
Yeah, yes and yes.
Cause I know there's tofurkey.
No, don't ever bring that up as an example. You see what? You know what? That's the thing. There it is. There is a mechanized, automated, and human thing on this planet to make anything good for you or anything slightly better. Tofurkey is like, perfect example. Clean coal. That's what tofurkey is.
I don't think anybody's ever said that.
Yeah, in terms of mock meat. Worthington makes a turkey sliced product that simulated white meat turkey, and I could go for some of that right now. It was pretty good. Broke the right way, you know, mouthfeel's everything. Well, yeah, mouthfeel's everything. Then the smell, or lack of a smell sometimes. And then break the right way. You put the right seasoning on it. Nobody can tell. Most Americans can't cook anyway, so. They're not like over here on the edge of the spectrum with us who, you know, you can, when you mean too much salt, you mean like there's 1 millimeter too much salt and this spice and that spice. The whole food porn side of us, where food is a different element and a different experience. But yeah, finally found out I've been switching all these years, and it happened when I was 7 years old, when I was being bullied. And then suddenly I became the person that was supposed to be for the situation. It was always caused by stress or that sinking feeling in your stomach, you know, that fight or flight.
Right.
And then boom, I switched. But I had all the other shit there. I'm new here, blah, 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 blah. And the bipolar is just a warning light. But it also, it explains why I've never been really harshed up by police. Because anytime I have a police stop, I have a closer personality. That's you, Tracy. You know what I mean. You know what I'm talking about. And that's true. Carlton doesn't go to jail. And it's always shocked people. Y'all talking like this. I'm talking like this, officer. Point being, it's been weird in the closet. And I'll leave it at that. And that's why I'm calling the horn today. Also, you know, Biden's been packing gas lately. He's made me chuckle a couple times every day.
I hear unscripted, it seems. Yeah, I hear you're free on Wednesdays.
Yeah, that was go to. You should have emphasized that, but he doesn't. I think that's a dyslexia thing where he doesn't timing. You understand what I'm saying? Trump did time and emphasized amongst the best. He got that from Hitler or whatever. Now he's talking gibberish, but Biden used to love land when he drops like that, but he's a president, he's not a comedian. And yeah, it still worries the fuck out of me, which I'm going to get my voting thingy and passport all at the same time this year, just saying, not saying, that Trump is even close. And the whole Republican Party is going down there and dancing and curtsying in front of his trial. I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, I know we're masked off, but shit, man.
Oh, yeah.
This would have worked in the video coverage.
And speaking of villains, Matt in San Francisco just said, I've always gotten a Jabba the Hutt vibe from Bill Barr, but then again, Trump gives me that vibe, too.
No, Trump is Jabba the Hutt. Boom. With orange flex. Inappropriately placed. And an inordinate amount of real weird little mushrooms. Yeah, thank you for that image. You deserved it. $14.75. You pay now. So
stop. Wait, stop that. Jesus.
No, I'm afraid I'm doing this.
Oh, and I heard from Matt again. He said, Matt said, Robin wins. Take the win. If it was a Republican win with 57 votes, they'd say they have a mandate and the people are overwhelmingly in support of their agenda. Fake it till you make it, you groundbreaker, you. Matt, thank you.
Hey, I didn't win an election yesterday, so fingers for everybody. You did. One of ours, pulled ahead. You. Congratulations.
Kind of blows my mind.
Small cutscene. I now be very puppet in this one. Just saying. But yeah. Talk about my stuff, even though my stuff's fascinating. Guy ordered a jury trial in his arraignment on the 28th, and I got videos. And that's it. To show premeditation and hate crime. All that other stuff I was talking about. But I have to integrate to the top of the hierarchy to come up with plans because
The other ones can only react and scheme in real time, but nothing long term, which is something I've learned. But a lot of times I let them run shit because, quite frankly, they're better. And I don't know why it happens. I think if you looked at, oh, it's mental health awareness. That's why we're doing this. That's why we're doing this. Mental health awareness month. Yeah.
I do believe you're right.
Yeah. So, here we are. Corn, you know, a multi-split. Wave or Scary Jerry. Yeah, look at that. And that's why Scary Jerry had to go away, because he wasn't playing. Yeah. I'm Wave. I'm the one on the birth certificate. I'm the one that has to pay all the fines and gets to cash any lotto tickets. Or has grandbabies. My grandbaby's kid's birthday was yesterday. How about that, huh? Is there any other feeling, Grandma? Is there any better feeling than that?
I think you're right.
Nothing. The only other better feeling is to see an old parent who was 90. And I did my first FaceTime with him yesterday. He looked at me and said, damn, you look old. I got a little at it, but that was the spirit. He's a Christian man. He wouldn't come off rip like that. And I laughed. I was like, Pop still got it. I got to get an iPhone so I can just chat with Pop. They should have started. Apple should have led with this. Nothing about it if the Apple makes sense, but they do that QuickTime thing. And finally, with his hearing aids, he could hear me because it was all indexed to the Apple ecosystem, his hearing aids, which is a fuck shit thing because I was calling him on an Android and it sounds terrible. But Apple to Apple, it was lit, as the kids say, which I always heard, but fuck you, Apple, for doing that. But yeah, one and wrong, I guess. He's 90. I'm not going to sit there and wait for a fucking balancing protocol. So if you want to know why you get an Apple FaceTime, call it QuickTime, damn, I'm old. You said I didn't call it real audio and real video. Remember that?
I do.
We should kill llamas right now. Because, wait a minute. It really kicks the llamas.
No, I miss it.
We have the best audio. It's still the best sounding audio player I ever made. I really do. There's been a couple equal, but not better. And they just went away. You can buy a copy when it. That's the problem. They should have had ads because nobody buys it. How are you doing? This, Robin, it sounds like you're sitting there with a look on your face.
I can feel it, actually. No, I promise I'm not.
No, good look. Not a bad look. A little bit of stun that did. We're just doing English here. A stun that did look on your face.
Deer in the headlights, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that thing you did 2020. Was it 2019? When, December, yeah? Yeah. Yeah, it was. Either that or 2020. No, it was 2019. Well, it was 2019, right? When you did your reveal before you took your ride?
Here, as far as the program's concerned, it was December 31st, 2020.
Okay, 2020. Okay, the end of 19, 20, and 21 all seem fucking same to me, other than that. Other than your epoch. I knew it was something like that, but I didn't know. So one of the others knew. Especially when you started speeding up your words and you started getting really jittery. And I'm like, why is Robin jittery? And then one of my boys says, yeah, why does he sound like a girl? Here we are.
Here we are.
Because you were masking. And who you were jumped over the hill.
Yeah. I've had friends who I've known for a very long time who said, you know, it seemed like you were angry about something all the time. And now we know why.
No, I loved your anger. That's what drew me to the anger. In fact,
one of us said, oh, the anger's going to go. She's going to get all soft and we're pink and it's going to turn into a cooking show. I know it. Also, listen.
Oh, dear.
You got to let Bob out. Oh, buddy, come on. Hmm?
It was.
Oh, no,
yeah.
No.
It was.
But no, you got better at the politics thing and more effective. I mean, shit. In the grand scheme of things and patterns, I understand why the AIC Act isn't really a thing, even though you stopped pimping. It's not because it's bad or wrong. It's just in our current, I mean, he took $1 billion so we can continue to set the environment on fire. My fucking God. This is the type of thing that used to come out after 10 years and it'd be a big scandal. And people, oh my God, I can't believe that. Now it comes out like 8 hours. Yeah. And they gave it to them. They gave them a check.
Oh, so you're gonna love this. I just got a note in from Clarence. You know Clarence.
Yeah.
And Clarence just checked in based on something you said. Clarence met Ralph's challenge. Thank you, Clarence. That gets us down to 1425. But
Brother Clarence came up. Yes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Reverend. Clarence said, I'm sitting in my truck at a way station 100 miles north of Miami. Oh, by the way, I don't have my pants on. LOL. Congrats on your win. So the no pants contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation has checked in.
So it's the no pants and the hover pants? We're all going to battle out and play a weird form of soccer.
I mean, there's no pants. And then, of course, our dear friend Reverbo, the human man, is still waiting on delivery of his helium-filled pants like he was promised back in the beginnings of the marvels of the space age. Still no helium-filled pants.
You know what, though? They could do drone pants right now. They really could. Of course, you know, people can't. People drive. Tesla auto driving. No, nobody needs to fly around and go, man. Nope. We can't take care of normal four wheels. That's still about. So I don't, you know, people go flying car. No. People can't activate their regular cars. Why do you want to add the fourth dimension to that or a different access? No, people be flying into churches and all that shit. No, I we're on a scary pass. We're all rolling, I think, as hard as we can. I think all the Democrats are popping their heads out and going, no, we're not doing this shit. And I don't care if 3 years before, right, seriously, Trump came by every month and gave $1,000 check, you know, put together all the shit he did. The way he handled COVID, still visceral, unconscious reaction to that.
We didn't have to have somewhere between a million and two million dead. We didn't have to, Wade.
No, it wasn't just that. It wasn't just that. That was one of the better points. It was the whole feeling vibe that I had no idea what the fuck to do. You're on your own. I'd never felt that as an American before. I'm just starting to move around that, not past it. That was some shit. Where you look up at the top and you go, this guy has no idea what he's doing. Yeah, this is the zombie virus, isn't it? We're getting the zombie virus, aren't we? And the fact that, well, yeah, that's pretty bad. I mean, Biden makes a joke about the bleach up and on, but I remember that. And I watched a comedian from 4 years ago, reference that. And the fact that he couldn't tell anybody to fucking put a mask on because of his ego and his face paint. This actually happened. Wow. That was like 4 minutes ago. And I'm thinking about this. And in the loony bin, I had political conversations. Can you believe it? You know what? Some of that was some of the best time I've ever had.
I bet some of those were doozies.
wow. But I wasn't giving people an hour or a week to develop. I'm going, you're a fucking Trump voter, aren't you? And then I was, I met a Trumper, and I wanted to stab him. I really did.
Don't talk like that. Don't talk like that.
Let me finish. I can. This is a confessional, Robin.
We're peace loving.
They would
here.
Ask me a question. I wanted to. I didn't. They gave me a pencil, and I was like, "That's a good idea. I probably could get a crayon." Just saying, not saying. But he tried to come off. You know, he was a mixture of Franklin Graham and Dr. Olstein and Dr. Phil. Still in the crazy ward, but you know that was his personality. But you could just smell the fucking burning cross as he walked. And I have this unique. Somebody said. Also, and they go, Scorpios have an ability to antagonize people. I go, yeah, but it's like amplified because all of my, whoever the fuck or whatever Russell calling it, can see something and they strip something from it. So when you go up against me, it's not like one person that I said it. Really good in debate, too. So I would just needle him a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. So pretty soon, I had everybody in the movie been over in one area and he was sitting by himself at a table. And he was terrified that I had the power to do it. Because I could adapt to everybody and hang out with them. The guy who, I don't like bullies. I guess it came from bully. Yeah, that I don't like bullies. And any kind of bully, I'll deal with it, and I can't even stop. There was a night. And I met one of my people from back in the day from South Beach. We used to be a party promoter, world's oldest party promoter. God, that was fun. And one of the grimy clubs I was at, I'm the main club at that time. And he was, two souls were vibing, but one didn't know one was trans. I didn't blow it up. But when I saw it was going, I told the male in the confirmed male in the situation, and he was like, shocked, and then I didn't want anything to happen to the other person because my feelings were different at the time. But I don't like cruelty, and that never changed. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
I didn't want anything bad to happen to her because she was really into him. It's just that the state of her body wasn't everything she expected. That's art right there.
The struggle is real.
So he was drunk. He didn't care. I was like, this is going. You know what? It could have. I don't know. But people. People have always goomed on trans people. And that's always pissed me off, but I never knew why. The bullies did. I always saw trans people like four-leaf clovers. Rare, unique, interesting, and lucky. Lucky to have around you. Perspective rush.
That's very sweet. That's very sweet.
I'm operating with no walls or preconceived or pre-assembled bullshit today. It's a beautiful, that's why I said I'm having a beautiful. I don't know. I did get overdosed by the side doctor. He's a resident. But it brought this on. So every calamity or mistake or whatever brings you closer to where you're supposed to be. I mean, I have to get a chemical stomach pump, too. Because he was dosing the wrong type of person. The medication he had, he needed only like a sniff of it every other day to be productive. But he didn't. You're like, oh, that's nothing. Well, because he was dosing the wrong thing. And when he whipped, now here's, this is quite serious. I'll be quite serious for a minute. Because the nurse repeated his order. Subject slash patient showed signs of mania. At least that's so he involuntary. Because I went in to get a haircut. I came out with an amputation and castration. I just wanted my scripts. And I'd have been on my way, but they made a thing about it. And I couldn't retreat it. I missed everybody who came to the
father's birthday, and I stay out of town because I was in the fucking hospital. And that hurts. And that sucks.
It does, but I remember one of your more recent calls, and I'm not being critical, but it seemed like you were not in a good place.
No. No, I wasn't, because I needed every single one to live, Robin. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
I was going to get stabbed, and my body dealt with. That's where that was going. I have a police report and a criminal trial to substantiate that. That was real. So if you go through something like that, something where you're literally running faster than you ever knew you could, we're falling down with an option, like the little toe stub that, no, you're going to die if you don't get away from this guy. And you do it because those little guys in your head are pushing you on, telling you how to run, telling you how to move, because that happened too. It was Matrix-like. This guy was 16 years younger than me, 13 years younger than me, military training, and he couldn't catch me. And he stopped and he tried to catch me. I just looked into him in his eye like I was Bo Jackson. And I'm not that athletic. No, I was not in a good place. But I had to, haven't had meds for 6 months. And I had to get out of all of that in one piece, no matter what. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like that. If you haven't, you're privileged, and God bless you. May you never have to go through that, because that was what my father's joke was about. My hair turned white. A lot of stress. So no, I wasn't in a good place, and the information was coming out all fucked up. But shit happened. Shit happened that I knew was going to happen. Not initially, but when I took the blinders off, I'm like, oh, fuck, I see what's going on here. So I let it play out. Because small towns protect their own, Robin. Doesn't matter what the newcomer says happened. It's what the old timers and the conks and the city residents happen. Even in the charging, you know what I'm saying, Robin? So the newcomer got to prove himself.
Yeah. Old Boys Network. I mean, it's it may be South Florida, but it's the South.
No, it's extra south of the Keys. I never factored that in, and they protect their own. If they're seeing somebody around for 10 years and they know where his kid goes, and his kid was in the parade last week, and his mama went to school. Well, who are you? Well, your wave just showed up. Fuck you. So there was definitely that. But I did tell them I could see the future, and I would change theirs if they crossed me, and I did. So, every night, we're down to 1430. Congregation, I'm a little embarrassed here. I know
1425.
Some of y'all are rich. All right, I'm sorry on the pig late in the massing. 1425 is the goal. We need to bring some peace of mind, some hope. In Hornland, be generous. Let the spirit of the universe flow through you. Next two, some cash, some pennies, some cash app, some dollars, some checks, some money orders, some gift card. No, shut up about gift card. I just want to talk. Shut up. Some cash, respect, folding money to the whole show. And give God, Allah, and Buddha, and Vishnu praise. Horn family. I love y'all. Good night.
Take care, Wave. Later. He definitely sounds better. And that's a relief, and that makes me happy. So we got about a half an hour left in the program. A couple of things that I wanted to take note of, as it were. One of which, back to our filthy morning habit. But again, this is one of those things that I remember in the fairly recent past, Stephen Burlington critiquing the pearl-clutching, hand-wringing, breathless polling data that's out that seems to come out every so often. And the polls are often completely at odds with each other. Trump's winning in key battleground states! And through the course of conversation and correspondence, we've decided that probably not worth putting a whole lot of mental energy into these polls at this point in time. And lo and behold, over there, Morning Zoo Crew, seemed to figure it out today. Go figure.
The latest morning consult tracking poll over 10,000 registered voters finds 44% for Trump and 43% for Biden. That's within the poll's margin of error.
It's not 12 points. It's a tie. Okay.
And separate new polling of registered voters finds President Joe Biden leading Donald Trump. In this survey from the New York Times and Ipsos, Biden is up 4 points, 47% to 43%. We should note, though, that the margin of error is plus or minus 6% for the poll.
So I get to say it's fascinating, Willie, and we'll get into this. The New York Times ran a few polls. They ran the New York Times Siena poll, which they roll off, it's a series, 15, 16, 17 stories that make people run around Manhattan with their hair on fire and Washington with their hair on fire. At the same, put it this New York Times Ipsos poll.
The Ipsos. Put
it back. Okay. One at the same time by the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
Biden's ahead by 4 points nationally. 4 points nationally. Not even an article about it. Anyway.
As for that New York Times Philadelphia Inquirer Siena College polling of six key battleground states that came out Monday morning, there was a lot of reaction to that. As we know, some of the most trusted pollsters in the country are calling into question the methodology and results.
You think?
The CEO of the Nevada Independent, John Ralston, calls Trump having a 13-point lead in the state, quote, bizarre, adding that nothing remotely similar has been seen in the state in decades. The founder of UVA's Center for Politics, Larry Sabato, says he laughed after seeing the Nevada numbers and recommends others do the same. National political reporter at The Bulwark, Mark Caputo, also calls the Nevada poll, quote, a total outlier. Meanwhile, the director of polling at Harvard's Institute of Politics, John Della Volpe, is raising questions about how Biden could be losing the youth vote by 27 points in Michigan while winning it by 24 points in Wisconsin.
A million monkeys with a million
cell phones here,
making calls as pollsters. Okay. That's how you do it.
Finally, the New Republic's Greg Sargent expressed dismay at the survey's methodology. This is important, which shows 20% of the likely voters polled either didn't vote in the last two midterms.
Wait a second.
Wait a second. Vote.
They're likely voters.
But they did not vote.
The 20% of what the New York Times is calling likely voters.
So let me finish.
Didn't vote in the last general election or the last two midterms.
And the didn't vote in the last general election or the last two midterms, or they have never voted at all.
But wait, John Heilman, there's more. And by the way, people calling and going, oh, this is just a reaction to one poll. No, you can go back. You can look at the tape. We do this every time a New York Times Siena poll comes out. It's always an outlier. And the New York Times always gets 15 or 16 articles out of them that everybody rushes to because it says Earth ends at 5 o'clock. Go hit link at New York Times 15 times, and they keep writing articles about it. There are, and NPR has found some of these voters that said, well, you know, I voted for Biden before, and they said, but wait, this guy, we checked the voting rolls, he's never voted. Other news organizations, right, like three, four more examples, not just of people in the surveys, but people the New York Times quoted in their articles of, well, here's one of many people that we interviewed that said he's disillusioned and is going to vote for Trump. No record of them voting.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you feeling something?
Well, I think sometimes, as a general matter, there's maybe a little bit of an over-reliance on voters telling the truth about things in general. Hate to say it. Reporters find this occasionally that reporters lie. Here's what I'd say about this poll. If I were to ask you this question, Joe, do you know anybody on either side who doesn't think that it's the case that of the battleground states that Joe Biden is stronger in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin than he is in Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia.
It sounds about right. I've seen some polls that show that Georgia's very close. Greg Bluestein actually had an article that also says that the Siena poll is wildly off.
I'm not saying it's not close. I'm not going to carry water for the New York Times or for the methodology of this poll. I'll keep going back to a thing that I try to say every time we talk about these things, which is that I'm really interested, and I know you know this, is like, what are the polls telling us directionally about the race?
I understand. There's a difference, though, with the New York Times Siena poll, and you know this. It's given disproportionate impact. This year, this cycle, it is skewed wildly in Donald Trump's direction. Hold on.
Yeah.
And the New York Times feasts on it with clickbait stories like a dozen at a time.
And what I'm trying to focus on is what I think people should pay attention to.
But what I'm trying to focus on is the New York Times right now is actively shaping the election cycles, where this poll comes out on a Sunday and on Monday people go, oh, and I heard it. And I'm sitting there going, oh, don't be so stupid. That's why we're doing this.
So hold on.
What I hear is after these Siena polls come out, every time New York Times poll is, oh, well, everything that Joe Biden's done since the State of the Union address, all this money that he's put out, all of the campaigning is for naught. No, it's not. No, it's not. There's one poll that's wildly skewed every time. Okay. And it does shape, if it's a New York Times poll versus a Morning Consult poll, and the New York Times then amplifies it 15, 16, 17 times, it warps reality, and everybody responds to that in the media and in the political world.
So all I'd say about this is that I agree with you that the problem to me, unless you want to suggest you think there's a conspiracy at the Times about this, which you're,
Their methodology is bizarre.
Well, but you're talking about
Larry Sabato said this,
Joe, you're saying something more than that, though. You're saying the New York Times is systematically putting these polls out in a way to try to amplify them to drive the news cycle.
Yes, I am saying that.
I'm curious. As someone who I understands your level of sophistication about reading the media, why you think that's true. What I'm trying to say is, I agree with you. The best bulwark against any polls, outliers, or anything else for people who are actually consumers of this information is to not let any given news outlet or any given poll shape your perception of the race unduly.
Isn't this interesting? I mean, I find this fascinating because it's not very often that you see Jehoshaphat and Heilman kind of going at each other. And I feel like I may have to shower and bleach after the program, but I find myself agreeing with Jehoshaphat. It is on purpose. And as to the why, come on. I mean, nobody will say this, but isn't this to be expected in a political atmosphere or a political situation that runs on capitalism? I've got a little bit of skin in the game right now, thanks to the folks who have reached out and kicked into the campaign, trying to come up with enough money to buy the necessary stuff, you know, yard signs and social media ads and that sort of thing. I'm small fry. Oops, I think I may have just gotten sideways with the octopi again. But I am sensitive to the fact that this capitalist campaign finance system that is so fucking dirty, tax-exempt grifts out there, pouring money, and they routinely, you know, the money is over on the other side. West Virginians for life. You know, who don't give a good goddamn if a woman bleeds out into the floorboard of her pickup truck because she can't get abortion care. Life. And it's ugly. And people dig into their pockets. And yes, this program fundraises for its survival. I know that. But again, at least this program doesn't turn you over to the tender mercies of someone selling stupid beats. Or vitamin supplements that don't actually have any vitamins in them. Or paleo chocolate chicken bone beverage, or Bose Wave radios, or, you know the litany, Swedish mattresses made from foam developed by NASA. We don't do that here. But on the political side, being constantly bombarded by, friend, can you give $3 today? And that entire model began back in, 2004, was it? That was a model invented by the Howard Dean campaign. Because they figured that a lot of little donations might be able to put a dent in the great big money check donations on the other side. It's not a bad idea as far as it goes. But the one thing no one will ever say, except me, is that every 4 years, especially, you know, presidential terms, but, you know, 2 years too, but every 4 years, people on our side of the debate are implored to give, and then the campaigns to which they give the money turn around and buy campaign ads from outlets that are primarily owned by Republicans and who hate our guts. It's not campaign finance, it's wealth redistribution. It's the reverse Robin Hood effect that a lot of progressives have talked about over the years. And it's toxic. And you wish there was a better way. And I don't know if there is. I mean, meaningful campaign finance reform would be really cool. But, you know, thanks to the Federalist Society judges sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States, money is speech, my friend. And that goes entirely at odds with one person, one vote, doesn't it? If your $1 million buys you more speech, what does that do about the, what does it do in regard to the political donor who has to bust ass to come up with $3? How much speech are they really getting? And so I found this clip fascinating. We're gonna finish it out. There's just a couple of minutes left, but I want to see where Heilman goes.
That's not realistic, and I'll tell you why it's not realistic, because, and I'll say to you, because I know people come up to you after every New York Times Siena poll comes out. It completely changes the political battlefield out there for about a week, week and a half. It distorts the questions that are asked of the White House. It distorts the questions that are asked of Donald Trump. It distorts all of the opinion. It distorts everything. And that keeps happening every month when this comes out. And then finally, about 2 weeks later, after the residue of the New York Times Siena poll leaves, people go, oh, I think Joe Biden's on a winning streak. And then 2 weeks later, it comes out again, and it's garbage. It's an outlier. And yes, the New York Times, when they have all of these experts questioning the methodology, when they're calling like 20% of the people, likely voters who have never voted before or didn't vote in the last two primaries, when they're even quoting people who said they're switching their vote from Joe Biden, who have never voted before? I'm sorry. The New York Times has to know what they're doing.
You know, most of the voters in this country don't live in Washington or New York. And certainly most of the Electoral College votes are in a different part of the country. So these polls have an outsized influence on the people who are doing most of the voting.
Yeah, and certainly, the White House, as you might imagine, the Biden campaign reacted with some anger about these polls. They feel like...
Well, how in God's name is it not voter suppression? Okay, there's ham-fisted, heavy-handed voter suppression, you know, literacy tests, poll taxes, Jim Crow laws, that sort of thing. But then there is soft voter suppression. Oh, Trump's winning. Trump's going to win. We're all doomed. Project 2025 is going to come and eat us alive. And I'm not downplaying Project 2025 or the risk that Nitwit Nero poses. But where some people might be motivated and say, "Ooh, I got to get more people out to the polls. Oh, I got to get out the vote." Some people say, "Ah, no. We're going to lose anyway. Better hunker down. Better give up. Better hope I can just survive the coming 4 years." I mean, just in my little district last night, or in my county, rather, there were in excess, I know, we're very rural here, y'all, but I think you know that. There were slightly more than 25,000 registered voters. Of that number, somewhere around 25% managed to go out. Of that 25%, the Republicans did a better job of getting out the vote than the Democrats did. And so even though I suck at ciphering, that tells me that if 25% came out, and that maybe, 60% of them were Republicans and 40% were Democrats, the 60% of the 5,000... which is about 3,000, made the decision for what, 15,000 people? And something similar on the Democrat side. And it kind of blew my mind as I was watching the statewide returns last night to find out that in the entire state of West Virginia, and this is a sea change that has taken place over the course of about 20 years, that was created largely by when Joe Manchin turned the Democratic Party of West Virginia into his own personal cult of personality, and when if you weren't kissing the ring with Joe to the Manchin born, you were toast. We lost everything. And so yesterday on the statewide ballot, the Democrats couldn't. There's what, 1.7 million people in this state. And out of that number, whatever fraction is the adults, not one person wanted to step up and run for treasurer of the state of West Virginia. Not one. I don't know why, because it was a lost cause, I guess, or they deemed it would be. But when you can't even find somebody to run for a statewide seat of prominence, a constitutional officer like that, you got problems. And frankly, it's like that all over the South. It seems like this region has a taste for single party rule. Never mind Stevie Three Shirts and the rest of the weirdos screaming about the Uniparty. I mean, there are people in this state now who are Republicans now who were Democrats all their lives. But something changed them? Oh, and by the way, Clarence with a note, justice denied. I think Trump should have been held accountable for the COVID disaster. To me, the other crimes he committed are less important. The massive loss of life was caused by his narcissistic attitude. I think the justice system is making a huge mistake not addressing this crime. The problem, Clarence, is trying to figure out where it's crime. Or how it could be a crime. You don't have to, the Constitution speaks to high crimes and misdemeanors with regard to impeachment. His grossly negligent response to the pandemic was certainly an impeachable offense. And frankly, the fact that he's rotted so many brains. Wave was talking about zombies. Yeah. But then again, the upshot to that rather lengthy clip from Morning Joe, it goes to show that that we are being manipulated, that there is soft voter suppression. And the New York Times has to make money, and there's big money in horse races and clickbait, which is what the coverage mostly is. I imagine there were probably some minor quakes in New York after that Jeremiad that he engaged in there. And the suits of the New York Times are probably not happy, considering the number of New York Times journalists who fairly routinely show up on that program. And if they stop showing up on the Morning Zoo crew, that's going to get the suits upstairs at NBC Comcast right pissed off. And then, well, shit gets interesting. And one last thing before we go for the evening. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Bishop Willard Romney, who by January will no longer be a senator, he won't be a governor, he won't be nothing. I don't know if he still holds views himself as the protagonist in the White Horse Prophecy. But over at MSNBC, they booked Bishop Willard to come on to the 11th hour with Stephanie Ruhle, where, lo and behold, Bishop Willard actually talked about how bummed out he was to see members of Congress going and abasing themselves in the name of Nitwit Nero. Okay, good. Stephanie Ruhle asked him, so how does that make you feel about Republicans? And Romney said, I think it's a terrible fault for our country to see people attacking our legal system. That's an enormous mistake. I think it's also demeaning for people to quite apparently try and run for vice president by donning a red tie and standing outside the courthouse. It's just, I'd have felt awkward. Embarrassed, humiliated. But you have to have shame to feel any of those things. But then it got worse. Because Bishop Willard then declared what should have happened. He declared that President Biden made an enormous error, by not using the power of the Oval Office to put pressure on Alvin Bragg to drop the criminal case that is presently underway. Romney declaring that
I should have fought like crazy to keep this prosecution from going forward. It was a win-win for Donald Trump.
And blinking at crimes like that? Who's that a win-win for? So then Stephanie Ruhle asked him, should President Biden just pardon Nitwit Nero? And of all people, Bishop Willard hearkened back to LBJ.
I've been around for a while. If LBJ had been president and he didn't want something like this to happen, he'd been all over that prosecutor saying, you better not bring this forward or I'm going to drive you out of office.
Sounds like something Nitwit Nero would do, doesn't it? And Stephanie tossed him a little softball over the fat part of the plate, and he said,
yeah, I do support having separate but equal branches of government. You may disagree with this, but had I been President Biden, get ready, here comes the nausea. Had I been President Biden when the Justice Department brought on indictments, I would have immediately pardoned him. I'd have pardoned President Trump. Why? Well, because it makes me, President Biden, the big guy, and the person I pardoned, the little guy.
It never ends with these people. They probably wouldn't accept a pardon, Nitwit Nero, simply because that involves an admission of guilt. And that was not going to happen. But my God, save the nation by letting the man that Jamie Raskin referred to as a one-man crime spree just laugh it off? No. Fuck that. No. I know, Ralphs. Ralphs, what? Yeah. This is expertise and punditry we don't need. And that is not statesmanship, saying that you throw out the criminal law of the United States of America for a guy who has had no accountability in his entire life. Thank you, Gino. Just got a note from Gino. Congrats on the election. I'm heading to Italy for a few weeks. Oh, and then China. Damn, my job sucks. Yeah, rub it in, Gino. So I won't be listening, but I want you to be here when I get back. It would be nice if other folks would step up as well. Thank you, Gino, and it would, and people do. And hopefully we'll dig out of this hole. And so now, as the program comes to an end, I can happily thank Gino for I have a show on me. And note that we are now down to 11:25. Which is fan-damn-tastic. Thank you, Gino. And safe travels, my friend. Safe travels. And, well, try to think about the Roman Republic a little bit while you're there. Or, oh, I don't know, just engage in food porn, perhaps. And then China? Gino, are you going from here to Italy and then Italy to China? Are you coming back to Utah and then going to China? Gonna be some jet lag in there somewhere. But enjoy it all. Enjoy it all. What a job. Thank you, Gino. Thank you so much. And thanks to each and every one of you. Thanks to our Patreon subscribers and our PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our challenge makers. Thank you, Ralphs, this evening. Thanks to Clarence for meeting Ralphs' challenge. Gino, thank you so much for the Have a Show on Me. Means there's going to be some bill paying. A little bit at a time. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. I hope your food preserving class was good and profitable. Roger. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Yeah, I got your message there, Brother Deacon. Please like each episode of the podcast. It really does help when you do that. If you listen on TuneIn, click that heart button, and maybe one of these days we'll have 1,000 hearts there. Leave a comment here and there. That helps. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, like I said at the top of the program. White Rose is going away on June 1st. If there's anything there that you want to download, and there's a ton of stuff there. Get it before June 1st. After that, Ben's hanging it up. And the White Rose will go dark. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people, I know the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Find out when you get your next booster and get it. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. There is another variant out on the horizon. And, of course, if a certain bishop on a white horse canters up to you saying, President Biden should pardon Donald Trump, I'll avoid the bishop like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Oh, and remember, no program tomorrow. Later.